8:32 the time, 28 minutes shy of the 9 o'clock hour. Welcome to a Tuesday edition of the Mornings with Ed show. And over the last several months, while the world has been focused on the Russian mistreatment of Alexei Navalny, who had gone on a hunger strike and has now ended it, there has been very little attention paid to another injustice being done to Paul Rusesabagina. In 1994, in Rwanda, some of the worst atrocities in history took place. And in an era of high-speed communication and round-the-clock news, these events went almost unnoticed by the rest of the world. In only 3 months, a million people were brutally murdered in Rwanda. And in the face of these unspeakable actions, Paul Rusesabagina, an ordinary guy who summoned extraordinary courage by saving the lives of 1,300 helpless refugees by granting them shelter in the hotel that he managed, he received the Presidential Medal of Freedom in 2005 from President George W. Bush. You know his story from Hotel Rwanda. I gave you the assignment last night to go home and watch it. Now, 25 years later, in August of last year, Rusesabagina, a Texas resident, by the way, has been kidnapped and imprisoned in Rwanda by the government of Paul Kagame. Joining us for the conversation this morning, the adopted daughters of Mr. Rusesabagina. You saw them at the end of the motion picture Hotel Rwanda. They were the little girls at the very end, Anaïse and Karine Kanimbe. Welcome to the program. Thank you for being here this morning.
Thank you for having us on the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm delighted to have you on. A lot of things to cover this morning. The first thing I want to know is, how is your father right now? Do you know if he's healthy?
Well, yes. So we've been very, very lucky and privileged to have a phone call every Friday from him for the last few months. And this is something that doesn't really happen for prisoners in Rwanda. So we're very grateful of that. And in his calls with him, you know, we last talked to him on Friday. He was calmer than usual. He's always very calm, and he's always reminding us that, you know, he's in prison, so things can be as good as they can be in prison. But he's staying strong and staying, always reminding us to also stay strong. He's been able to catch up on a little bit of the news outside of the prison cell, and we've been informing him what's happening. And so he's catching up slowly on the news around his story, which is making him feel much more comfortable that he can be, of course, but just reassured that he's not alone. And so that makes us happy too.
Okay, good, good. Now, are there people there that can see him daily or weekly? Is there anyone, do you have family there that can visit him?
No, you can go, Karen.
Go ahead. No, so the only people who are able to see him are two Rwandan lawyers that go into the prison to visit him. We don't have any family members in Rwanda. It's been because of who our father is and his advocacy and criticism of the Rwandan government over the years. They've made it very difficult for people to even mention our father's name in Rwanda. It puts their lives at risk for being affiliated with us, because the president of Rwanda considers him one of his biggest enemies. So it's been very difficult for anyone to get close to him. And really our only connection with him is those 5-minute phone calls and the lawyers that can occasionally go in and see him.
Okay. Now, I'll remind our audience that the president, Paul Kagame, had celebrated the movie Hotel Rwanda until Paul Rusesabagina criticized him. And then all of a sudden, all bets were off. Can you explain to me what happened in August? How did the kidnapping take place?
Kevin, you want to take this one?
Yes. So while our father was traveling from San Antonio, Texas to Burundi through Dubai, he got onto a private plane that was supposed to take him to Burundi, and instead the plane took him to Rwanda, We know now that the Rwandan government orchestrated everything, that this was a planned operation to lure him to Rwanda on the pretense of inviting him to speak at churches in Burundi. When he arrived in Dubai, he got onto the private plane. On the plane, he was drugged and brought to Rwanda instead. Upon arriving in Rwanda, he was tied up blindfolded by the eye that covered his eyes, his mouth, his nose, and tied his legs, his hands, and he's almost 70 years old. And he was taken in an unknown location for 3 days. So we know that his arrival in Rwanda was through this torturous event. But the worst part is that upon us finding out that he had been kidnapped and taken to Rwanda, the Rwandan government came out with 3 different versions of the way he was arrested. The first lied that it was through international cooperation. And the Belgian authorities and the U.S. authorities and the UAE authorities all said that they had nothing to do with it. Then they lied that there was an international warrant for his arrest, which also was confirmed that it wasn't the case. And then they say that he came to Rwanda by his own free will and willingly. And that we also know is not the case, because this government has tried to assassinate him, to intimidate him, and to hurt him for so many years. And so he wouldn't have gone willingly. And so we know that he arrived in Rwanda on August 27th, and we only got first contact with him 11 days after that. And after that moment he arrived, all of his human rights, all of his most basic and fundamental human rights have continued to be violated, not only from the kidnapping and the torture he was inflicted with, but also depriving him of his chosen attorneys or access to his case file or even his medication. So essentially everything from the moment, from the end of August, has changed for us and for him for the worse.
So there was never even a Rwandan warrant of any kind issued for his arrest, just a straight blatant kidnapping.
Go ahead.
I was going to say that the Rwandan government, apparently there is a warrant on, but the lawyers have not been able to see it. They have not been permitted to see it. So the prosecution has this whole story kind of made up, but without any warrant. And that's kind of the source of some of the legal debate happening in Kigali, is that there is no warrant for this arrest and no one has seen him. And one thing I would like to add to what Karine said is that President Kagame on September 5th or 6th gave a speech to the whole nation where he said that his plan had worked flawlessly, and he actually joked about the way he brought my father to Kigali, and this was an emphasis on all these being orchestrated by the Rwandan government, all the lies they had to say to cover it up, and he just put the truth out there. So we've known since September 6th that it was a plan of the government, but it was only until, I would say, January, February, that the truth was officially out by the Rwandan government, and them admitting that they had kidnapped him, paid for this jet to bring him to Kigali, them admitting that they had seen been reading his client and attorney privilege conversations. When I say them, that was the Minister of Justice of Rwanda admitting that in an Al Jazeera interview.
Wow. Well, I want to add that it's internationally known that throughout Kagame's tenure as vice president and president, he's been linked with murders and disappearances of political opponents, not just in Rwanda, but abroad as well. So the examples include the killing of Sendashoga, and I hope I'm pronouncing it right, in 1998, and the assassination attempts against Niamwasa in South Africa, as well as the murder of a former intelligence chief in South Africa. So my question is this: the attorneys that have been provided to your father, are they government attorney? Where are these attorneys coming from that are representing him in Rwanda?
So Anais, go ahead.
So initially, when he was still at the prison, in the first week, actually, he was at the police station. Our lawyers, his name is Gatera Gashabana, one of the two lawyers that we have currently, went to visit him. And that same week, the police said that he could not see my father. But then 2 or 3 days later, we saw this government-appointed lawyer, led by David Rugaza, hold a press conference in which they were saying that my father had selected them among a list of 4. So he had selected 2 out of 4
provided lawyer by the government. These lawyers were by his side for at least 8 weeks. So it's not until mid-November that Gatera was able to see my father alone. For these first 8 weeks, it was government-appointed lawyers who were always next to him, even when we spoke with him on the phone. We know our phone calls are monitored, but back then it was even more dangerous and scary because you could hear in his voice that he was not being himself. And that's because he had these people on his neck all the time. There were some pre-trial events happening before in that period where these lawyers also demonstrated that they did not work in his best interest, didn't bring any of the issues regarding to the kidnapping, the arrest warrant, and the list goes on. So the lawyer that he's currently seeing and who can visit him today, who confirms how he's doing, is Gatera Gashabana, another one called Felix, and they were able to officially get on that case in December. So when the trial began on February 17th, the lawyers, his chosen lawyers, had only seen him 6 times.
Wow. So I read that the organization Human Rights Watch came across a video call by Rwandan Justice Minister Johnston Busingye, where he admitted that Rwandan prison authorities had violated privileged communications between your father and his attorneys. Are you considering the possibility that the trial is really just a show and his guilt has already been decided and that's it?
Yes, absolutely. And I think just to back up on this, just to back up a bit to answer this question, you mentioned earlier that President Kagame initially liked Hotel Rwanda and welcomed the movie.
Yes.
This only changed when our father became critical of the human rights abuses being perpetrated by this government. And the attack started, the assassination attempt started, the smear campaign, the false charges, I mean, throwing around different lies in the media and around the world. And this lasted for the past 15 years, really. And this leads us to the kidnapping in August, right? So then after being kidnapped, the Rwandan government tried to assure to everyone that he was there legally, he was arrested legally, and that he was going to be given a fair trial. But to start, a fair trial doesn't begin by kidnapping. If you want to give somebody a fair trial, you either, in another country, you extradite them through legal means, not through kidnapping and torture. So the idea of a fair trial was already lost at the moment of the kidnapping, but they've continued to insist this in the international media and in their own court system that this is going to be a fair trial. However, the president of Rwanda, as Anais mentioned, in the first week went on national television and said that our father had blood on his hands. And this is a dictatorship. If you say something that is opposite of what the president wants or says, your life is at risk. So the idea of somebody, even the judges opposing the government, saying that what the president said was wrong, is also puts their lives at risk. So the idea of a fair trial, again, is also can be raised there. But since this trial has started, I mean, we've seen more cameras in the courtroom than lawyers. We've seen the judges ask the co-accused to say things against my father when they didn't in their testimonies. We've seen all kinds of fair trial violations, and including the video that you mentioned where the justice minister admits to having confiscated and read our father's confidential document. And so if the same country that is the government that is suing you or that is bringing you into justice is also reading all of your defense strategy and everything that you plan on saying in court, then there's no way you're going to have a fair trial. So we know that this is just a show because, as I mentioned when I started, that Paul Kagame has just tried to smear our father all these years and he just had not succeeded. And the only way for him to do this was to kidnap him, bring him to Rwanda and make him go through a Soviet-like show trial in order to humiliate him and then lock him up forever and silence him, essentially.
If you're just joining us, we are speaking with Anais and Karine Kanimbe. They are the daughters of the celebrated Hotel Rwanda hero, Paul Rusesabagina. And my question is, here in the United States, who's helping you? Have you contacted your congressional representatives for help or either of the two Texas senators for help? What are we doing? What's the United States doing to help?
So the United States has been helping us, and we've been working with actually Senator Cornyn and many other senators and congressmen and women from the United States. In December, actually, the letter came out in February a letter signed by 37 members of Congress, bipartisan and bicameral. We demanded the release of my father and was requesting this release to be on humanitarian ground because they had seen that my father is still not receiving his medication. He has hypertension and he's 66 years old and he is a cancer survivor. So the conditions in which he's living today are very critical for his health. And at the same time, they reminded the president of Rwanda that if he wanted to get my father, he could have followed due process. Just recently, there's a Rwandan woman who was extradited to Rwanda because of some genocide crime that she's accused of. So there is a process precedent for that, and Kagame chose not to do that. And so the U.S. government now, you know, they've been helping us in trying to put more pressure on President Kagame, but we need more support. And I think what we need more is more voices and more representatives to get behind a U.S. resident and somebody who was a recipient of the Presidential Medal of Freedom and what it means for the sanctity of that award, but also for any kind of American or permanent resident who gets kidnapped in a different country and how they take care of it. So we hope that there's more pressure to the government of Rwanda, but we are really grateful as well of all the things that's happened already so far.
Okay. Now, before we head out, I want you to tell us specifically what our list. If I'm sitting in my car and I'm hearing this interview on the radio, what can that listener do to help? And what do you want the world to know?
Well, so to help, first of all, thank you. I think we need people to talk about my father's case in your living room with your friends, because the more people talk about this, the more he has a chance to stay alive. And one way you can do is by calling your representatives, telling them about this case, because we've learned that the more people call, this is recorded, and the more they will follow up with us as well when we reach out to them. So we take a two attack approach. At the same time, some of the most difficult things have been the legal funds to be able to keep up with all the legal fees for my father and the law and our campaign and specifically the lawyers. And so we have a legal defense fund, which we would always welcome donation. And that's a really great way to support our family during this difficult financial time as well. But what I would love for people to know is that my father has always spoken for the most vulnerable. He's taken a stand when people did not have to. During the genocide, he decided to put his life at risk for the lives of others. I'm not asking your listeners to put their lives at risk, but I'm asking your listeners to stand up for what is right. And standing up for what is right is calling out what happened to my father and telling your representative and your friends and trying to help us bring my father back to us.
Anais?
Maybe Karine can also add something too.
By all means, Karine.
Yeah, so I would also just add that, Dad has always also encouraged people to speak up against evil, to speak up when they see injustice. And that is exactly the reason why he's in the position he's in today. It's because he dared to speak up and to highlight injustice and to call for action from the international community. So what I would tell the listeners as well is to be courageous, to dare to call out the Rwandan dictatorship, and to also help us demand our father's immediate release, and to also continue to advocate on social media, because we know that the Rwandan government is highly afraid of social media and cannot control it as much as it control all the other websites in Rwanda.
Okay. Is there a website or an email address or somewhere we can help financially with the legal costs? Is there somewhere the listeners can go for that?
Yes. Yes. If you go on the free with the Sebagina, and it's a long name, so it's free. Rusa Sebagina, RusaSebagina, freerusasebagina.org. And I'm happy to also tweet it at I know you guys have a Twitter handle, and I can tweet to you guys our website and all the information that you can also to follow us on Twitter as well.
Okay. Anais and Karine Kanimbe, we hope you come back and update us regularly on this. We're going to keep an eye on it. I certainly appreciate you being here this morning, and all our best wishes to your father and his good health and his hopefully good fortune here in the coming months.
Thank you so much, Ed.
Thank you so much for being here this morning. 8:52, it's the Mornings with Ed Show.